off Guam in the Western Pacific, and discovered, not incidentally, by Harry Hess with his fathometer. It took just under 4 hours to fall 35,820 feet, or almost 7 miles. Although the pressure at that depth was nearly 17,000 pounds per square inch, they noticed with surprise that they disturbed a bottom-dwelling flatfish just as they touched down. They had no facilities for taking photographs, so there is no visual record of the event. After just 20 minutes at the world's deepest point, they returned to the surface. It was the only occasion on which human beings have gone so deep. 40 years later, the question that naturally occurs is, why has no one gone back since? To begin with, further dives were vigorously opposed by Vice Admiral Hyman G. Rickover, a man who had a lively temperament, forceful views, and, most pertinently, control of the departmental checkbook. He thought underwater exploration a waste of resources and pointed out that the Navy was not a research institute. The nation, moreover, was about to become fully preoccupied with space travel, and the quest to send a man to the moon, which made deep-sea investigations seem unimportant and rather old-fashioned. But the decisive consideration was that the Trieste descent didn't actually achieve much. As a Navy official explained years later, we didn't learn a hell of a lot from it, other than that we could do it. Why do it again? It was, in short, a long way to go to find a flatfish. And expensive, too. Repeating the exercise today, it has been estimated, would cost at least $100 million. When underwater researchers realized that the Navy had no intention of pursuing a promised exploration program, there was a pained outcry. Partly to placate its critics, the Navy provided funding for a more advanced submersible to be operated by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution of Massachusetts. Called Alvin, in somewhat contracted honor of the oceanographer Alan C. Vine, it would be a fully maneuverable mini-submarine, though it wouldn't go anywhere near as deep as the Trieste. There was just one problem. The designers couldn't find anyone willing to build it. According to William J. Broad in The Universe Below, no big company like General Dynamics, which made submarines for the Navy, wanted to take on a project disparaged by both the Bureau of Ships and Admiral Rickover, the gods of naval patronage. Eventually, not to say improbably, Alvin was constructed by General Mills, the food company, at a factory where it made the machines to produce breakfast cereals. As for what else was down there, people really had very little idea. Well into the 1950s, the best maps available to oceanographers were overwhelmingly based on a little detail from scattered surveys going back to 1929, grafted onto, essentially, an ocean of guesswork. The Navy had excellent charts with which to guide submarines through canyons and around GIOs, but it didn't wish such information to fall into Soviet hands, so it kept its knowledge classified. Academics therefore had to make do with sketchy and antiquated surveys, or rely on hopeful surmise. Even today, our knowledge of the ocean floors remains remarkably low resolution. If you look at the moon with a standard backyard telescope, you will see substantial craters, Fracastorius, Blancanus, Zach, Planck, and many others familiar to any lunar scientist, that would be unknown if they were on our own ocean floors. We have better maps of Mars than we do of our own seabeds. At the surface level, investigative techniques have also been a trifle ad hoc. In 1994, 34,000 ice hockey gloves were swept overboard from a Korean cargo ship during a storm in the Pacific. The gloves washed up all over, from Vancouver to Vietnam, helping oceanographers to trace currents more accurately than they ever had before. Today, Alvin is nearly 40 years old, but it still remains America's premier research vessel. There are still no submersibles that can go anywhere near the depth of the Mariana Trench, and only five, including Alvin, that can reach the depths of the abyssal plain, the deep ocean floor that covers more than half the planet's surface. A typical submersible costs about $25,000 a day to operate, so they are hardly dropped into the water on a whim, still less put to sea in the hope that they will randomly stumble on something of interest. It's rather as if our first-hand experience of the surface world were based on the work of five guys exploring on garden tractors after dark. According to Robert Kunzig, humans may have scrutinized Perhaps a millionth or a billionth of the sea's darkness. Maybe less. Maybe much less. But oceanographers are nothing if not industrious, and they have made several important discoveries with their limited resources, including, in 1977, one of the most important and startling biological discoveries of the 20th century. In that year, Alvin found teeming colonies of large organisms living on and around deep-sea vents off the Galapagos Islands, tube worms over 10 feet long, clams a foot wide, shrimps and mussels in profusion, wriggling spaghetti worms. They all owed their existence to vast colonies of bacteria that were deriving their energy and sustenance from hydrogen sulfides, compounds profoundly toxic to surface creatures that were pouring steadily from the vents. It was a world independent of sunlight, oxygen, or anything else normally associated with life. This was a living system based not on photosynthesis, but on chemosynthesis, an arrangement that biologists would have dismissed as preposterous had anyone been imaginative enough to suggest it. Huge amounts of heat and energy flow from these vents. 2 dozen of them together will produce as much energy as a large power station, and the range of temperatures around them is enormous. The temperature at the point of outflow can be as much as 760 degrees Fahrenheit, while a few feet away the water may be only 2 or 3 degrees above freezing. A type of worm called an alvinolid was found living right on the margins, with the water temperature 140 degrees warmer at its head than at its tail. Before this, it had been thought that no complex organisms could survive in water warmer than about 130 degrees. And here was one that was surviving warmer temperatures than that, and extreme cold to boot. The discovery transformed our understanding of the requirements for life. It also answered one of the great puzzles of oceanography, something that many of us didn't realize was a puzzle, namely, why the oceans don't grow saltier with time. At the risk of stating the obvious, there is a lot of salt in the sea, enough to bury every bit of land on the planet to a depth of about 500 feet. Millions of gallons of fresh water evaporate from the ocean daily, leaving all their salts behind, so logically the seas ought to grow more salty with the passing years, but they don't. Something takes an amount of salt out of the water equivalent to the amount being put in. For the longest time, no one could figure out what could be responsible for this. Alvin's discovery of the deep sea vents provides